Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Zvochim Daf Kuf Beis. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara Marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the shiur. And even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. As we turn our attention to the last line of Kuf Aleph Amud Beis, where today's shiur will begin, we find a triangle. The triangle indicates that we are in the middle of a series, because there had been a few triangles before this already on the daf. The topic of the sugya is Rav's halacha, Rav's point, that Moshe Rabbeinu was a Kohen Gadol. The Gemara will be challenging Rav's contention by citing a few sources that would seem to indicate otherwise. The triangles indicate those questions. So here we are at the third triangle. The bottom line features a source concerning Miriam, who had become a tsaras. She had, after speaking about Moshe Rabbeinu, we find this in the Parsha, at the end of Parshas Bahaloischa. A Masora is someone who suffers a skin discoloration that creates a tumah status in order to determine whether a person is a Tzora'a, a Metzora. We need to have a Kohen that looks at the discoloration and establishes that this, in fact, is a sign of real Tzora'as. A Kohen is the one that must do this, and a non-Kohen, though he may be able to identify what it is, his word is not going to have any legal relevance. With that in mind, that a Kohen is the one that needs to paskin, needs to rule on the tzaras, we continue in the Gemara. Meisve, Miriam mi hisgira. Who was the one that ruled on Miriam that she should be separated from the camp? A Mitzora is an individual who is separated from the rest of the people. There are several stages to this separation, but we're not going to get into that right now in the context of our shiur. So, for our purposes, the question is, who ruled on Miriam's tzaras? Im Toimar Moshe Hisgira, if one would suggest that Moshe, her brother, is the one that ruled on her tzaras, thereby warranting her to be quarantined, Moshe Zar Hu, V'ein Zar Royas HaNegoyim, Moshe was a non-Kohen. Notice we've dashed underline this point, because this is really the main point, or the main reason that we're bringing this source into our current discussion. We see from here that Moshe Rabbeinu was considered a Zar, a non-Kohen, and a non-Kohen cannot look at, namely, cannot rule on Negoyim, Negoyim being Tzaras. V'im Toimar Aaron Hisgira, if you'll suggest Aaron is the one that ruled on her being quarantined, Aaron couldn't do it either, because Aaron Korov Hu, V'im Korov Roe Es HaNegoyim. Aaron, even though he was a Kohen, he was nevertheless a relative, and a relative is disqualified from ruling on a relative's negoyim. So who put her away? Who quarantined her? Ela kavod gadol chalak lo Kodesh Baruch Hu leMiriam ba'ois hashoah. The Kodesh Baruch Hu himself, he bestowed upon her honor and said, Omar, he said, Ani kayin, v'ani mazgira, ani cholta, v'ani potra. The Kodesh Baruch Hu, who classifies himself as a kayin, so to speak, and there are proofs to that in the Torah that one could describe the Kodesh Baruch Hu kivyochol as a Kohen. And in that capacity, I will rule on her being set aside. Masgira is the first level of being put away, where one is confined to his home. And then ani cholta. Cholta is a situation where after the tsaras is determined to be of a serious nature, we'll say, without getting into legal details, then I will cholta is I will rule that she's to be put out of the camp. Vani potra, and I will also rule that she is finished with it. So we see from this source, though, in view of the fact that we need a kohen to rule on it, Moshe Rabbeinu was disqualified. Katani mihas, it however says here, Moshe equals zar, that Moshe was a non-kohen. Ve'en zar roya esenagoyim, and a zar, and as such, a non-kohen is not acceptable in ruling on a goyim. Well, what do you say about Rav's opinion? Rav says that Moshe Rabbeinu was a kohen gadol. That's the end of the question. Omar Rav Nachman Ritzok, shiny maros negoyim. The topic of negoyim is different. Da'aron uvonav ksuvim b'parsha. In the case of Rias negoyim, it's not sufficient to be classified as a kohen, but one has to be a descendant of Aharon in order to rule on negoyim. And Moshe Rabbeinu was not a descendant from Aharon, and thereby he was disqualified, even though he was legally called a kohen, as Rav said. Meisvei, once again we see a triangle. This is number 4. Chomesh smochois hoiso Elisheva Yisrael benois Yisrael. On the day that the Mishkan was set up, Aleph Nisan, Elisheva, who was the wife of Aaron, had five reasons over and beyond the rest of the women of Israel. What were her reasons for joy? 1. Yevomo Melech. Her brother-in-law, Elisheva, was the wife of Aaron. Aaron had a brother named Moshe. Her brother-in-law, her Yevomo, was a king. Isha, that word Isha is really is made up of two words, Ho'ish Shelah, meaning her husband, Aaron, equals was a Kohen Gadol. Number 3, Beno Sgan. Her son, Elozer, was an assistant to the Kohen Gadol, or a vice Kohen Gadol. Ben Bina, her grandson, Pinchas, was Moshuach Muchoma. He was a Kohen anointed for the purpose of leading the people into battle. V'ochia Nasi Shevet. And number 5, her brother, Nachshon Ben Amidodov, was the head of a tribe, the tribe of Yehudah. But with all of these reasons for joy and honor, Vavela al Shnei Bonea, she was nevertheless mourning on that day for the loss of her two of her sons, Nodav and Aviu. The reason this source is brought in, the Gemara points out, Kortoni Miyasid, however, says, Yevoma Melech. Yevomer, which her brother-in-law, Moshe, was a king, Melech in Kohen Gadol Lo. He's described as a king, not as a Kohen Gadol, and that's contrary to what Rav said. The Gemara points out that one shouldn't read the source with an inference, but rather, Emo Af Melech. Her brother-in-law, Moshe, was described as being even a king, namely in addition to his being a Kohen Gadol, like Rav said, he was also a king. Ketanoi. The Gemara now declares that classifying Moshe as a Kohen is a machlokes tanoim. So we have a Tanaic source, also in a frame, as you can see, as we've seen already several of these frame sections, all Tanaic sources. In our marking system, we frame off Tanaic sources to set them apart from the rest of the Gemara. And in this source, we'll see Tanoim disagreeing on this matter. There's a topic heading we have in the outside margin, the Nosei. Divrei Rav, de Moshe Hoya Koyin, Have Machlokes Tanoim. And another point we'll see later in this section of Gemara, Kol Charonaf Yesh Boi Roshem, that when the Torah describes wrath by the expression charonaf, there's always some type of mark left, so to speak. Roshem literally means some kind of mark is left. Let's see the source that in which we will see an indication that that Moshe's classification as a kohen is in fact a machlokes tanoim. Vayichar af Hashem b'Moshe. Rabbi Yoshua ben Korcha Oimer, Kol charoin af shebetoiro ne'emar boi roishem, v'zeh lo ne'emar boi roishem. Rashi points out, ne'emar boi roishem, simen ma shel charoin hoyosham. Some kind of indication or a mark, if you will, that there had been wrath. Pe'omim hako, sometimes you see along with the wrath some kind of beating. Pa'omim nazifa, sometimes there's an expression of anger. Pa'omim klola v'giduf, and sometimes cursing. However, in this pasuk, Vayichar af Hashem b'Moshe, we don't find any roshem, some kind of lasting mark. Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai omer, af ze ne'emar bo roshem, in this charon af of Hashem against Moshe, this anger of Hashem against Moshe, there is a lasting mark. Shinemar, the pasuk says, halo Aaron ochicho halevi. The pasuk describes Aaron as being, Aaron his brother as being a Levite. Well, v'halo kohen hu, but we know that Aaron was a kohen. Elo hochi ko'amarle. Rather, thusly, one is to understand things. Ani omarti ato kohen v'hu levi. I, says HaKadosh Baruch Hu, says the Almighty, intended you, Moshe, to be a kohen, and him, Aaron, to be a levi. Achshov, but now that you are refusing, or hesitating to do my shlichus, to do my mission, which was the case featured in Shmos Dalad, Posuk Yudalad, where the Kodesh Baruch Hu appeared to Moshe, insisting or requesting him to go to Paro in anticipation of redeeming the Jewish people from their bondage in Mitzrayim, and Moshe Rabbeinu refused. This aroused the Charon Af of the Almighty. And as a result of that, Moshe Rabbeinu, who was intended to be a kohen, in fact, became a non, did not achieve that status, and rather, Aaron, his brother, did. That's the mark left by this particular Charon Af, that was mentioned in Pasuk Yudalid. V'chachomim omrim, loy niskayin Moshe, elo shivas yemei hamiluim bilvad. The Chachamim say that Moshe served as a kohen for the 7 days leading up to the construction of the Mishkan, to the permanent construction of the Mishkan, the 7 days of consecration. V'yeshomrim lo posko kuhuna elo mizaro shel Moshe. The Moshe Rabbeinu was a kohen all of his days, and only with regard to the continuation of the kuhuna through his children, that is what stopped. That opinion, the opinion of the Yesh Omrim, would be the opinion on which Rav is based. Shenemar, the pasuk says, Moshe ish elokim bonov yikaru al shevet halevi. The pasuk says that Moshe Rabbeinu, his sons will be ascribed to the tribe of Levi, but Moshe Rabbeinu himself wasn't a mere Levi, but was actually a kohen as well. The Omer Moshe v'Aaron b'Chayanav u'Shmuel b'Kurei Shemoi. My v'Omer, what is the necessity of having this additional pasuk? The pasuk indicates that Moshe, along with Aaron, was a kohen. What do I need that pasuk for? V'Chitemo, one might have thought, l'Doyrois hu d'chtiv. The first pasuk was a pasuk referring to the subsequent generations, But in fact, Moshe was also a Levi and not a Kohen. In other words, the first pasuk wasn't featuring the future generations of coming forth from Moshe to the exclusion of Moshe, but rather the pasuk was describing the future generations as being future generations coming forth from Moshe as being Leviim, and Moshe himself was a Levi. Therefore, the Omer, I need the second pasuk to say Moshe ve'Aaron b'choyanov, that in fact Moshe, along with Aaron, was a Kohen. The Gemara asks, "V'chol charon af shebetoyro nemar boi roshem." Is it really so that every time the expression charon af appears, there is a lasting mark with it? V'oksiv v'yitze me'im paro bochori af. V'lo amale v'lo midi. The pasuk says that he departed from Paro in wrath, and there's nothing further stated. Omer Eish Lakish, there was a mark, Sotro V'yotza. He slapped him. Moshe slapped Paro and left. So the slapping, as we saw before in Rashi, is an example of Hakko, a beating. The Gemara asks, Umi Omer Eish Lakish Hachi, would Eish Lakish suggest such an answer? V'oksiv. V'nitzavta l'krosso asfas hayor, v'yomer Eish Lakish, melechu, v'hisbir lo'i ponim. Rabbi Yochanan Amar Roshehu Vehiz Ponecha Bo. The pasuk in describing the way Moshe Rabbeinu was supposed to greet Paro, the Reish Lakish says he was supposed to greet him, being that he, Paro, was a king. His Birlo Ponem greet him in an honorable fashion. Stand there and stand by Paro at the edge of the river, the Sfas HaYor, in an honorable fashion. That's how Reish Lakish presents or describes the way one is supposed to deal with Paro. So how could it be in the line just before, Reish Lakish says that when Moshe Rabbeinu was leaving Paro, he left the Bechori Yaf and slapped him. When Moshe Rabbeinu was instructed to, according to Reish Lakish, to deal with Paro honorably. Rabbi Yochanan has a different take on it, and Rabbi Yochanan says that, after all, Paro is an evil man, and be bold against him. So the Gemara answers, Epoch. This last point that has Rabbi Yochanan saying that he was a Rosha and deal with him boldly, have, instead of Rabbi Yochanan saying that, have Reish Lakish saying that. And thereby showing consistency in the opinion of Reish Lakish. As we go on in the Gemara, we have a topic heading, the Nosei, Le'olam Te'emas Malchus Alecha. One should always have upon him the fear of the kingdom. And Kabolas Malchus Lios Melech Ledoros. Receipt of the monarchy for generations. Omar Avyanai, Le'olam Te'emas Malchus Alecha. One should always have a sense of fear of the kingdom upon him. Dichtiv, Vayerdu Kol Avodecho Eile Eilai. All of your servants will come down to me. This was a pasuk that was stated to Paro. The ilu l'didei lo ko'omale, and it doesn't say you will come down to me. You will come down and bow to me. That wasn't said, because that would be dishonorable to say to a king that you, sir king, will come to bow to me. Rabbi Yochanan Amar Mehocha, a second approach to show this idea that when dealing with a king, one should be one should bear his honor in mind. V'yad Hashem hoisa el Elio v'yishanes mosna v'yiretz lifnei Achav. You see in this pasuk that Eliyahu HaNavi was, being that Achav was alone in this particular incident, Eliyahu HaNavi was instructed to run on foot ahead of the king to show him honor. And one can bear in mind that Ahav was a king who was not, was far from being classified as a righteous individual. Nevertheless, being that Ahav was the monarch, Eliyahu was instructed to show him respect. Omar Ula, Bikesh Moshe Malchus Velo Nosnu Lo. Moshe sought monarchy, and it was not given to him. The Gemara will elaborate on this, that the monarchy that he actually sought was one that should continue through his children. So the Gemara says that he sought monarchy and it wasn't given him. Dichtiv al tikrav halom, v'ein haloim elo malchus. If we take this pasuk of al tikrav halom and understand that the word halom means monarchy, so it's saying don't draw unto the monarchy, meaning that you are not going to get that position. Shenamar, how do I know that halom means monarchy? Because it says by David HaMelech, who we know became a king, it says, Mi onochi Hashem Elokim umi beisi ki havi osani ad halom. So you see that the word halom is used in the context of David HaMelech having been made a king. Mosiv Rava. Rava raises an objection. How can you say that Moshe Rabbeinu was not granted monarchy when we see that it says Rabbi Shmuel Omer Yevam HaMelech? We saw Moshe Rabbeinu described as a king. Omar Rabo Bar Ula. So Rabo Bar Ula answers, Loi Ulazaroi Komar. That which Moshe Rabbeinu sought was monarchy for not only for himself, but for his seed, for his children as well. The Gemara asks, bearing in mind Rabo Bar Ulo's Hesber, we have to go back a few lines and understand the pasuk that said Al Tikrav Halo means that you are not going to be granted monarchy for your future generations. So at this, with that in mind, we're asking, does the word halom really indicate for future generations? Well, Gabi Shol Dichtiv, does it not say with regard to King Shol, who was a king? And we know that the kingdom, the monarchy, did not continue through his future generations. It says, nevertheless, Dichtiv, Havei Od Halom Ish, who in Zaroi Loi. We see by Shaul HaMelech, the pasuk in Sefer Shmuel, Shmuel Aleph, Perek Yud, Pasuk Chof Beis, uses the word halom, and as we mentioned, by Shaul HaMelech, we know it was only his only Shaul himself was a king, but his children, in fact, were not. The Gemara answers, Iboy Sema Ha Have Ishboshes. In fact, he had a son that was, technically speaking, a king. So that when you see the word Halom, you can, in fact, understand it as meaning the a person and his children. And it was fulfilled in the case of Shaul HaMelech, where his son Ish Boishes enjoyed being a monarch. We should note the pasuk that we're focusing on was pasuk Chof Beis, which said Havo Oid Halom Ish, and we had explained that Halom, in fact, did mean future generations according to the first answer of the Gemara. Iboy Seimo, the Gemara though gives another answer. This one not taking into consideration Ish Boshes, Shiny Shol. The case of Shol was different. Dafilu begavei lo koim. Even with regard to himself, the monarchy did not last. Rashi explains that according to the original plan, Shaul and his offspring were to be kings, were to enjoy the monarchy. However, he was goreim that it should be lost. Kidu Rabbi Lozer, Om Rabbi Hanina, as Rabbi Lozer teaches, B'shal she'poisken gulul adam, poisken lo zaro, atzov kol adoros, when gedula, when high office is ruled upon for oneself and offspring, for an individual, it's ruled for that individual and his offspring till the end of time. Shenemar lo yigra meitzadik enov ve'es melochim l'kisei v'yeshivein lo netzach v'yigbo. The pasuk indicates that when the Kodesh Baruch Hu grants godless to the righteous, they are to enjoy it lo netzach, forever. However, v'im hegis daito, if, however, after achieving godless, a person becomes haughty and high-handed in that position, HaKadosh Baruch Hu Mashpilo, the Almighty, lowers him. Shenemar, the next pasuk says, Vim Asurim Bezikim Yilochnun Bechavle Oini. And the Rashi explains that the pasuk which says that they will be chained and caught in the traps and the ropes of poverty, that there's a cause and effect here. The end of Pasuk Zion had used the expression Vayigbo, where they become lofty or haughty. Then the following results, namely Vim Asur Bezikim, they become, they're lowered and lowered from position into chains and poverty. Bale Mumin, Bain Bale Mumin, Oivrin, Bain Bale Mumin, Kivuin, Cholkin Veuchlin, Avolo Makrivin. Our Mishnah said that all different types of blemished kohanim, whether they be permanent blemishes or passing temporary blemishes, they receive a portionment of sacrificial meat, eat from it, but they cannot offer sacrifices. Menohani mili, from where does the Mishnah know this? Before we go further in the Gemara, we note a geometric form. We see a trapezoid or volcano shape. And on the outside margin under our Nose Mivne heading, we see this geometric form featured. And we also have a note, Gimel Brisis Hadorshus Shloshe Psukim Kol Zohar. There are three Tanaic sources that will darshan the expression Kol Zohar that's found Shemoifim B'mincha Chatos Ve'oshem, that's found in three different sections of the Torah, one by the meal offering, one by the sin offering, one by the Osham offering. These three psukim, kol zohar, all males, are coming to include different aspects of blemishes with regard to this topic. So the Gemara opened up by asking, Minohani mili detonu rabbanon, from where do we know that which is taught in the Mishnah? So we have a Tanaic source, kol zohar, the rabbis bale mumin. Posted by Korban Mincha says, all, every male, including blemished Kohanim. Lemai, what is the necessity of including Bale Mumin? I la'achila, if it's coming to inform me of his being accorded a right to eat from the sacrifices, Hare kvar nemar lechem elokov mikotshe kodeshim yochel. We already have a posuk saying that he is able to eat from the sacrifices. Elo l'chalukah. The pasuk of Kol Zohar is telling me not only is he able to eat from other Kohanim's apportionment, but he himself receives a portion, an official apportion. Tanu idach. Kol Zohar, pasuk by the Korban Chatas says, L'rabbis ba'alei mumin. L'mai, what am I including the ba'al mum for? If for eating we already have a source for that, and if it's for receiving an apportionment that we've already determined, elo, the Girsa says, elo, the baal mum meikara. Rather, it's coming to teach me about a person who was born with a blemish, a kohen born with a blemish. Shiachol ein li ela tam v'naseh b'amum. I might have thought, without this pasuk, that a kohen who was born without a blemish and only subsequently became a blemish is entitled. However, b'amum eikaro minayin, a kohen who's born with a b'amum, with a mum, with a blemish, from where do I know that he too has a right for chaluka? Tamalomar kol zachar. So I need this pasuk kol zachar to include even a b'amum meikaro, a kohen born with a mum. Tanya idach, kol zachar. This pasuk is by the korban asham. The rabbi is b'amum to include a b'amum lemai. But for what purpose are we including the b'amum? Ilachi lo harik va'amur. If for the purposes of eating, we already have a separate source for that. Ila chaluka harik va'amur. The ila b'amum meikaro harik va'amur. So what do I need this additional pasuk for? Sheyachol ein li ela b'amum kavua. I would only know a permanent Balmum has rights to receive an apportionment. Balmum over minayin, from where do I know to include a Balmum over, which is a situation where a kohen has a blemish that's of a temporary nature, that he too is entitled to receive an apportionment. Tamadomar kol zachar. The Gemara asks, Klape Laya, where are you going? In other words, this last source seems to have a we'll call it anticlimactic type teaching to it. Namely, if I know that a Baal Mum Kavua is entitled to apportionment, that's a blemish, a permanent blemished Kohen. If I know that a Kohen with a permanent blemish is entitled to apportionment, wouldn't it stand to reason that all the more so a Kohen with a temporary blemish would be entitled to an apportionment? Well, Omar Rav Sheshes, April. So Rav Sheshes says we should switch things around. Namely, that the source should indicate I would know, without the additional source, all I would know would be the temporary blemish. And I would need an additional pasuk to tell me about the permanent one. Rav Ashi Omar, Le'olam Le'Ptepuch. Rav Ashi says, keep the source as it is, and if you think something appears to be anticlimactic, don't worry about that. There's no need to switch things around. V'itzterich, and I need a special limud to include the Balmum over. Before we go on in the Gemara, let's take a look at Rashi to serve as an introduction for this Gemara. The bottom of the Gemara, you see, under the Gemara, lo tepuch, Rashi says, v'itzterich kro, the midrashei hachi, and I need a pasuk for this purpose of including, a special pasuk to include the temporarily blemished kohen. Ma'udu tema, I might have thought kro kama kavua hu da achshir rachmona hu da achshir. I would have thought that the earlier pasuk is coming to allow the permanent blemish. Rachmona chosalei, because the Torah has compassion for him specifically. Mishum deles lehetera lemachor lemachrina, because he has no other hope other than a special scriptural ruling. Avol over. But an over, temporary type blemish, where by the course of nature he will become blemish free just by the passage of some time, I might have thought that he is to be viewed as someone who is unfit in his current temporary blemish state to receive. Therefore, the permanent blemish, he is the one that's more obvious as to receive an apportionment. As opposed to the temporary blemish, kohen, maybe he shouldn't receive anything until, of course, the blemish departs. So now let's read this in the Gemara. The itzterich, as we said, we need the final pasuk to include the temporary blemished kohen as having a right to receive an apportionment. Sakadaita Chamina, I would have thought, without the special scriptural ruling, ki tamei, that I would classify the temporary blemish kohen as a person, as a kohen that's tamei. Ma tamei kama de lo tor lo achil. just like by a Tomei, as long as he is in the state of ritual impurity, he does not eat from the korbanos. Av hainami, so to the temporary blemish kain, kamadalo misakin, lo ochil, as long as the blemish has not left, he's not become blemish free, he does not eat. Komash malon, therefore I need the special scriptural reference, the additional scriptural reference, to include the temporary blemish kain, and to not to classify him as a Tomei, but rather he will be viewed as a regular Baal Mum, and thereby have a right to receive an apportionment. Kol she'eno roi lavoido eino cholek babosar. The Mishnah declared that anyone who is not fit to serve in the offering of sacrifices, he does not receive a portion of the sacrifices. The Gemara asks, is that really so? Is that really a rule that one can rely on? We know that a blemish kohen who's not fit to offer sacrifices and yet he receives a portion from all sacrifices. Vesu. And furthermore, are we to understand ha roi lavoda cholek? Are we to understand the Mishnah with an inference, meaning that if he were fit for avoda, then he would receive a portion? But that too is questioned. Hare tomei bekorbanos sibor, a kohen who is tomei with regard to public sacrifices, we know the roi lavoda. He is fit to do avoda v'eino cholek, but because he's in a state of tuma, even though he's acceptable in the offering of korbanos, he nevertheless does not receive a portion of the sacrifices. So at this point in the Gemara, we're confronted with two questions on our Mishnah. The first question was, according to the Mishnah, if someone's not fit for avoda, he doesn't receive a portion of sacrifices. That's not the case, as we see with regard to the Baal Mum. He is not fit, and yet does cholek. And the second question is, well, the Mishnah as it is implies that if someone is fit for avoda, he does receive a portion from sacrifices, and we find that also to be untrue in the case of the Tameh. He is fit to serve in with regard to public sacrifices, but yet does not receive a portion. The Gemara answers, Roi le'achila ko'omar. The Mishnah is saying that a person who is fit to eat is deserving of receiving a portion. If a person is not fit to eat, then he does not receive a portion. So that's the way to understand the Mishnah. With that, we would answer the question regarding the Baal Mum. The Baal Mum is someone who is fit to eat, therefore he deserves a portion. The Tomei is someone who is not fit to eat, therefore he does not receive a portion. But even with this, we ask, Vare Koton, the Roi Lachila Ve'enocholek, a minor under Bar Mitzvah, this is a kohen who is under Bar Mitzvah, is fit, he's entitled to eat. Eat from korbanos that, let us say, his father received or other kohanim received. And yet, the katan, the minor, does not receive his own portion. So if you are going to set up the Mishnah as saying a rule based on the rights, one who has a right to eat, we find that rule being challenged in the case of the katan. The Gemara answers, Ha lo kotani. Don't read the Mishnah with a sense of inference. You see, we have an arrow to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text. This is a reference to the Ha that appeared a few lines up, where you also find an arrow. We originally ran into problems by learning the Mishnah with a sense of inference, where we said that if one, the Mishnah was stated in the negative, if someone is not fit for something or other, then the following applies. However, that would infer that if someone is fit, then something else follows. At this point, the Gemara is saying, don't read the Mishnah with that inference. namely that if someone is fit. And thereby, the question from the case of the minor falls away. Hashta the osis lahachi. Now that we've come to this point, la'olam k'omar meikara, we can learn the Mishnah as we did originally, as it's stated, namely roi lavoda. And the Mishnah says, anyone who is not fit for avoda does not cholek the bosar. Now, if one has a problem with that, imishum tame, and if you'll raise the question, what about the tame? Namely, he is someone that is not fit. He is someone that is fit for serving in Korbanos Sibur, and yet he does not receive a portion. Well, tame lo katani. Since we're saying that the ha lo katani, the only reason we came on to the question before regarding the tame is because of we had read the Mishnah with this inference approach. But now you're telling me don't learn the Mishnah with the inference approach, so the issue of the tame doesn't even surface. The e mishum baalmum. And if you'll say, well, what about the case of the baalmum? Where, if you're going to read the Mishnah as we did originally, with regard to Roy Lavoda, and we're saying anyone who is not Roy Lavoda doesn't receive a portion. Well, the Bamum is someone that's not Roy Lavoda and yet does. Rachmona Rabye, as far as the Bamum is concerned, there's a special scriptural ruling that includes the Bamum. But outside of that, the rule stands. As it says in the Mishnah, if someone is not fit for avoda, he does not receive an apportionment of sacrificial meat. Afilu tome b'shas rikas domim, v'tohor b'shas hekter chalovim, eino cholek. We had learned that even someone who was tome at the time of the sprinkling of the blood, but was tohor at the time of the offering of the innards, nevertheless, even though he has this partial tara time, he is not worthy or is not capable of receiving an apportionment. The Gemara raises a question from an inference. Ha tohor b'shas zrikas domim, v'tome b'shas hekter chalovim cholek. However, if you were to switch around the circumstances, namely, he was fit, he was tohor, he was pure, at the time of the blood sprinkling, and tome only later on at the time of the hekter chalovim, the offering of the innards, he would be entitled to a portion. Well, if you're going to say that, masnisen delo k'Abba Shol, then our Mishnah will be unlike the opinion of Abba Shol. Abba Shol, we will learn shortly, requires tahara from the point of zrika, from the point of the blood sprinkling, till the point of offering the innards. Only then can one receive a portion. The Sanya, the source continues, Abba Shol Omer, Le'olam Eino Cholek, Ad Shiehe Tor Mishas Zriko Ad Shas Hekter Chalovim. Kohen is not entitled to a portion of sacrificial meat unless he experiences Tara from the point of the blood sprinkling till the point of the innards being offered. Yomakro hamakriv es dam hashlomim v'es hachemev. De'afilu hekter chalovim nami boy. Even for we require tara, even for the offering of the chalovim of the innards. Boy Ravashi, nitmo beintayim mahu. Ravashi asks, according to Abba Shol, that was interested in the kohen being tohor at the point of Hekter Chalovim, in addition to his being Tor at the time of Zrika, what would happen if, in fact, he was Tor at the time of Zrika, became Tomei in the interim, and then achieved Tara before the Hekter Chalovim? So, the question can be viewed from two angles. Aleph, B'shas Zrika u'B'shas HaKtora Bo'inon Vo'ika. is Abishol insisting on Tara specifically at the time of sprinkling and at the time of Hekter Chalovim, and that you have in this particular example, Oidilma, or is Abishol's requirement as follows, Ad Shihei Tohor Mishas Zriko Viad Shas Hekter Chalovim, is Abishol possibly insisting on a continuum of Tara, an unbroken chain of time from the sprinkling till the Hekter Chalovim. But if there is an interruption of Tara of Tuma in the interim, that would disqualify him from receiving an apportionment. Teku. So this question remains unresolved. Omar Rova, Hai Dina, may Rebbe Elazar, Rebbe Shimon, Gamir Nole, the following I learned from Rebbe Elazar, Rebbe Shimon, the Omar Bebeis Hakise, Danta, that claimed that he had learned this, that Rebbe Elazar had learned the following while in the facilities, in the bathroom. Before we go on in the Gemara, we want to take note of the structure. On this side, we have a Nosei Mivneh heading, a topic heading with a structural note, including triangles. The triangles, as you skim ahead, and you can actually look at the little space to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text, and skim down, you'll see triangles with numbers in them, 1 through 4, as you go down. These are dugmois. We've written on the side dugmois shel tvul yoim shiroitze lachloik bekarbonois misu yomois. These will be examples called theoretical cases where a tvul yom. This is a person that had been tome and is at the end of his tumo period. He immerses himself in the mikveh in anticipation of the sun setting, at which point he would gain Tara upon sunset. Before sunset, but after he immersed himself in the mikveh, he has a special classification, and that is of being a Tvul Yoim. So this character, the Tvul Yoim, approaches the other Kohanim and expects, based on arguments, expects to receive portions of sacrifices. Each case the Gemara will present as we go on. We will also see the use of a double underline, and you can see that as you skim ahead. Tshuvos, these will be responses, lidchois oisoi, to deny the tvuyom from his of his request. Hamivusasos apsukim, the final responses to the tvuyom, will be based on psukim, and they will appear in each case as we go along. So the first example of this encounter between the Tvul Yom and the other Kohanim. Bo Kohen Tvul Yom the Omar, Kohen Tvul Yom comes along and asks of his friend that's Tohar, Tein li mi minchas Yisrael v'yochal, give me a portion of the meal offering offered by Yisraelim, and I will eat. I will eat in the evening after the sun sets. But he comes as a Tvul Yom and wants an official apportionment in anticipation of his being able to eat it that evening. Omar Loi, so the Tohar says, using logic, he says as follows, Uma'im b'mokoim shiyofe k'ichecho b'chatoscho. The Chisicho Mechatas Yisrael, mind you, in a situation where you have legal strength, and that is true in the case of your personal sin offering. The rule is that a Kohen who has a personal sacrifice to bring, he is entitled to bring it to the Beis HaMikdash and process it himself, even though it's not his term for serving in the Beis HaMikdash. The service period of the Kohanim was divided into the different mishmoros, service groups, each group serving for a specific week during the year. A kohen who has a personal sin offering, even if he's not part of that service group, he has a right to offer his own sacrifice. So that's what's meant by this expression, that, mind you, in a place that he has strength regarding his own sin offering, d'chisicha mechatas Yisrael means I have pushed you away from rights to receive a sin offering brought by other members of the Jewish people. A tvul yom does not receive a chelek. And this Rashi points out that lower down in the narrow lines, Rashi said, d'chisicha mechatas Yisrael, the tvul yom eino cholek ba. A tfuyom is not entitled to receive a chelek of a chatas Yisrael. Dichtiv hakoyin mechate yisoyechlena, v'kim leil yichalkena. That the kohen who processes it is entitled to receive a portion of it, but a tfuyom who cannot process the korban, he is not entitled to an apportionment. So the kohen Torah continues his argument against the Tvuyom, and says that, mind you, in the case of your personal chatos, where in general there, you have a certain, you meaning a kohen in general, has strength with regard to his personal chatos, and that he is able to offer it, regardless of the fact that he is not from that particular service group, d'chisicha mechatas Yisrael, but a Tvuyom himself is not entitled to a portion of a chatas Yisrael, in a situation where you have a weak position. The rule is that a kohen who brings a korban mincha, the korban mincha is completely burnt. The kohen himself receives no portion from it. This is in contrast with a standard korban mincha brought by non-kohanim, by Yisraelim, where a handful of the meal offering is put on the fire and the rest of it is eaten by the kohanim. Now you, Mr. Tuliom, are coming to request a portion of a Minchas Yisrael. You're on very weak footing with regard to your request, because the realm of Minachas, you already start out on a weak footing in the sense that Kehanim get nothing from their own Minachas. Eino din shadichecho mi Minchas Yisrael. All the more so will you be rejected from receiving a portion of a meal offering brought by non-Kehanim. That as long as you are a tfuyom, you have no rights to a portion. Omalei, so the tfuyom responds, Uma im dechisan mechatis Yisrael. Mind you, if in the case where, if you're going to argue your argument based on the chatis Yisrael, well, Uma im dechisan mechatis Yisrael, shekashem shiyofe kochi, kach yofe kochacho. With regard to the case of the Chatas Yisrael, where you're claiming, you're trying to make your Kal Vachomer based on the fact that I have strength with regard to my own sin offering, well, you have strength with regard to your own sin offering. Tedicheni mimimchas Yisrael. Should based on that, you push me off of rights to a meal offering? Shekeshem shahora kochi, just like my position is of a weak nature with regard to Menachas, as we said, a Kohen's Mincha is completely burnt, that's true with regard to your position on Menachas as well. Your position is also weak with regard to Menachas. So, you can't use the case of the Chatos to prove that I should be denied of a portion from a meal offering. Omar loy, so the Torah says back to the Tvuyom, Hare hu Omer. There's a pasuk that says, in the case of the Mincha, Lakoin hamakriv oisa lo tiyeh. The portion of the Mincha goes to the Kohen who offers it. Bo hakriv echol, come offer it and then eat from it. But since he's a Tvuyom, he can't fulfill this. So in the final analysis, based on the Pasuk, we find the Tvu Yom is rejected from receiving a portion of the Mincha, because he cannot come and offer it. Another case. Omale, Tainli, Mechatisuna Beochal. The Tvu Yom approaches the Tohor and says, give me a portion from the sin offering offered by the members of the public. Omale, the Torah responds with logic and says, you can't receive a portion of Chatas Yisrael, a portion of sin offerings brought by the members of the public. Uma b'mokim shehoira koichi b'minchasi d'chisicha miminchas Yisrael. Mind you, in a case where my own position with regard to a meal offering is weak, I have pushed you away from receiving a portion of a minchas Yisrael. This we prove just two lines above. So, mind you, in a case where my position is weak, and yet I push you away from the minchas Yisrael, mokoyim shiyofe kochi b'chatosi, in a position where I have strength with regard to my own korban chatos, and we pointed that out, that the strength by the korban chatos is illustrated by the case of a kohen. Even if he's not serving in that service group, he can nevertheless offer his own sin offering. So where I have a position of strength with regard to a korban chatos, all the more so will I be able to push you away or reject you from receiving a portion of the chatas brought by a member of the general community. Omale, the Tvu Yom responds, so what if you were able to reject me from the Minchas Yisrael? Just like your position is weak with regard to Menachos, so too my position is weak with regard to Menachos, as we mentioned before, that the Mincha, the meal offering of a Kohen, is completely burnt. They don't receive any portion of it. But based on that, however, Tadicheni Mimchas Mechatas Yisrael, should you be able to reject me from receiving a portion of a sin offering? Shekeshem Shiyofekovacho, just like you have a position of strength with regard to the Chatos, Kach Yofekochi, so too says the Tvu Yom, have a position of strength with regard to a personal Chatos. As we know, a Kohen, of course, if he's not a Tvu Yom, a Kohen has a right to bring his own Korban Chatos, even though it's not his week for serving in the Beis HaMikdash. So at this point, the Tvu Yom has a response to the Kohen Tor, and we could expect the Tvu Yom to be able to receive a portion of a Chatas Yisrael. Omale, so the Torah says back, Harehu Omer, but the Pasuk declares, HaKohen HaMechate Oiso Yochaleno, the Kohen that sprinkles the blood, he is entitled to eat from the, he's entitled to receive a portion of the chatas. Ba chatei vecho, come, Mr. Tvu Yom, and do the sprinkling, and then eat. Well, since he can't do that, since he's a Tvu Yom, he can't do the sprinkling, he's therefore, by virtue of the posuk, not entitled to a portion. Omale, a third example, where a Tvu Yom approaches the Tor for an apportionment. Omale, Tainli mechazer v'shok v'ochel. When Korban Shlomim were brought, the chazer v'shok, sections of the animal, were apportioned to the Kohen who offered it. So the Tvu Yom comes and says, I want a portion of chazer v'shok. Omar lay, so the Torah responds, Uma b'mokoim shiyofe kochacho b'chatoscho d'chisicho mechatos Yisrael. Mind you, in a case where you have a position of strength, as is seen in the case of a Kohen's personal chatos, where he can bring it and offer it even though he is not a member of that service group, nevertheless, when it comes to a chatos Yisrael, the Tvu Yom was rejected. Mokom Shahira kochacho b'shlomim she'ein l'cho bohen ela chozav v'shok. With regard to a korban shlomim, he doesn't receive the whole animal. He receives just a small portion of the animal, the chozav v'shok. So, with regard to a shlomim, He's starting off with a weak position. Eino din shadichacha mehen. Then all the more so, I should be able to reject you, the Tfuyom, from receiving a portion of Chazav Ashok. Omale, so the Tfuyom responds, Umaim dechisani mechatas Yisrael. So what if you were able to reject me from receiving a portion of Chatas Yisrael? Shekein hoira kochi etzel noshai v'avodai. That's because, with regard to eating from a chatos, only male kohanim are entitled to eat from that, and not the women members of the kohen's household, nor his slaves. But by the same token, should you be able to reject me from receiving a portion of chazav eshok shekein yofe kochi etzel noshai v'avodai, there I have increased strength, because when it comes to chazav eshok, there, not only is the kohen entitled to eat from it, but his wife and slaves are also. Therefore, the Tfuyom is maintaining his position that he should receive a portion of Chazav Ashok. Omale, so the Torah answers, Harehu Omer, the Pasuk though says, La kohen azurek is dam ashlomim lo yeh. The Chazav Ashok will go to the kohen who does the sprinkling of the blood of the shlomim. Bozrok ve'chol. Let's see if you can come and do the Zrikas Adam and then receive a portion. And we know that a Tvulyom cannot do that. Yotza Tvulyom kulav v'chamurov al roshoi oinein miyamino mechusar kapora mismolo. The Tvulyom saw that he cannot receive any of the above mentioned requests. So all of his kal v'chomers, all his attempts to use logic, kulov v'chamurov, the different types of logic that he was trying to darshan for his benefit, fail. So the Tfuyom is rejected, and along with the Tfuyom, we will also reject an oinein and a mechusar kapora who come in with similar requests. Based on the psukim that we cited along the way, we will see that an onain is someone who lost a close relative on a given day. So on that given day, he cannot offer the sacrifices. An onain is prohibited, unless he's a kohen gadol. An onain, a standard kohen onain, cannot do the sacrificial service. A mechusar kapora is a type of kohen that was tomei and requires the bringing of korbanos on the day after his immersion in the mikveh and subsequent sunset. On the next day, he has to bring korbanos. And until he brought those special korbanos to extricate himself from his previous state of tuma, he is called a mechusar kapora. And in that state, he is unable to offer sacrifices. As we look ahead in the Gemara, we see a long question marking to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text, a shin, a she'ela, and we also have a little explanation as to why the triangle that we're about to see on this line is a dashed triangle. So you see at the mivneh, on the structural note on the outside margin, a dashed triangle, mishulish mekuv kav, she'ela, Lama Reb Shimon ben Elazar lo nasan gam es ze kedugma. We're going to be asking a question. Why isn't the following, we're going to call it case 4, why is this not presented by Reb Shimon ben Elazar as one of his examples of a tvuyom with a specific request? Porach Rav Achoy lemole, couldn't a tvuyom say as follows? Namely, couldn't Reb Elazar Reb Shimon have presented the following request of a Tvuyom? Tain li mi b'chor v'ochal. Give me a portion of the firstborn animal that's offered as a sacrifice, and I will eat from that in the evening. And then the Torah could have responded, mishum de omale. We have to bear in mind as we go along in this piece of Gemara, that's part of the long question, and all of this is what we're asking. Why couldn't the following have been presented as a give and take between the Tvuyom and the Tohar on the part of Reb Elazar ben Shimon? So, if the Tvuyom would have come in with a request for Bechor, the Torah should have been able to say, Mishum de Omar Le, Uma b'mokim shahoira koichi b'chatos etzonoshe v'avodai. Mind you, in a case where I, the Torah, comes from a weak position, in the case of chatos, where we said that a chatos, a sin offering, cannot be eaten by a kohen's women folk, nor by his slaves. And yet, tichisicha mechatos Yisrael, I was able to reject you from receiving a portion in the sin of a sin offering offered by the general public. Mokom shiyofe kochi b'vachor. The kulei dilihi. In the case of Bechor, where I'm coming from a strong position, where when a kohen brings a Bechor, it's entirely his own. A Bechor is one of the gifts that kohanim receive. Eino din sha'adichacho mimenu. All the more so, I can cast you or push you away, reject you from receiving a portion of Bechor. The Tfuyom should be able to respond, Umaim dechisani mechatos, so what that you were able to push me off from the chatos, shekeshem shehoira koichacho, kachoira koichi. Just like your position is weak with regard to the Noshim and Avodim, so too my position is weak with regard to my Noshim and Avodim. However, to the Cheni v'Bechor, should you be able, by the same token, be able to push me off to reject me from receiving a portion of Bechor? Shekeshem shiyofe gorecho, kach yofe kochi. Just like you have strength with a Bechor, that if you receive a Bechor, it's completely yours. If I were to receive a Bechor, if some Yisrael had a firstborn animal and presented it to me, it would be completely mine. So, why is it that the... So how is it that the Tvuyom would not receive a portion of Bechor? Well, Harei Omer, it says by the case of Bechor, as domam tizroik al mezbech v'eschelbon taktir v'sorom yeloch bo zrok v'chol. Come and sprinkle the blood of the Bechor and eat from it. And we know that Tvuyom cannot do that. He can't come to sprinkle the blood. And therefore, he does not receive a portion of Bechor. All of this is at this point is the end of the question. Why is it that Rabbi Elazar Rishima did not present this case? The Idach. So Rava answers. Rava, don't forget, is the one that originally brought in Rabbi Elazar Rishima to our discussion. So Rava says back to Rav Achoy, who raised the question. He says, Miksiv, the reason that Rabbi Elazar Rishima does not say this, doesn't suggest this case, is because does the pasuk say, Uvesorom lakoyin hazorek, uvesorom yalochsiv, afilu lakoyin acher. The pasuk doesn't say that the bosor, the meat of the bechor shall be to the kohen that does the zrika. All the pasuk says is that when zrika is done, the bosor will be to the kohanim, not necessarily to the kohen that does the zrika. And therefore, the citation of a pasuk to reject the claim of Tzvuyom could not be employed over here. The Gemara raises a technical question. We saw earlier that Rava said he received a tradition from Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shimon that he, Rabbi Elazar, had learned while in the bathroom. But the bathroom is not a place that one is supposed to engage in Torah study. V'heichi ovid hachi. How can Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shimon say that he learned this while in the bathroom? V'amar Rabbi Baruchana, Rabbi Yochanan, b'chol mokim mutu lahar chus merchus beis hakisei. That in all places one is allowed to think in learning, think divrei Torah, with the exception of a bathhouse and a bathroom. So the Gemara answers, La'onso shiny. His thinking in the bathroom was something that he was doing beyond his control. He was so much involved with this particular sukya, with this particular area of learning, that his mind was, we'll say, working overtime. That even when he went into the facilities to relieve himself, he still could not disengage his mental thoughts
from this particular topic. And as a result, he continued thinking this while in the facilities, and this is what resulted. With that, we complete our shiur for today.